When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is brought to you in association with very.co.uk. Topshop has landed at Very. Check out the latest range and must-have pieces. Head to very.co.uk and order online now. Hi, and welcome to Open Mind with me, Frankie Bridge. Now, back in 2012, I found myself in hospital after a battle with anxiety, depression, and panic attacks. My journey led me to become an ambassador for Charity Mind, and this year I've been writing my book, Open. It's about my breakdown, my recovery, and my progress. I'm writing it because I want to be more open and for other people to be more open about their mental health, to speak out, to ask for help, and of course, be helped. By talking about my experiences with others who have found themselves in similar situations, I hope others will feel encouraged to be more open about issues that have burdened them. And that is what this podcast series, Open Mind, is all about. Plus, some good banter, hopefully, laughs, and some cake. There's going to be cake. So today I have a woman who is not only a best-selling author, presenter, blogger, actress, and a mum of three, and I've known her forever, even before kids. It's Joanna Fletcher!
Hi! I love that before kids bit, because the before kids bit, it's a different life.
I know, yeah, I know. It's weird, I just can't think of you as having, like, three. That's so many.
Especially in the same house that we always used to, like, be in. Like, yeah. Having tea, and now there's just, like, boys running around.
Oh, my God, I haven't thought of that. That's actually so true. Like, it's weird, so much has happened in that one house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a lot of naked boys, so it's a little bit like
it's
old
the same.
Times. It's the same in many ways.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I like, as long as it was naked boys, that was it. It was just naked,
naked boys.
Boys.
We
no
were
naked
never
girls,
naked.
No.
Put that out there.
We were normally just drinking tea.
But every night we'd get together and have tea. It was lovely.
I know. I feel like even before, so like back when you were younger,
yeah.
How were you as a kid? Were you like a deep thinker? Were you, because I find you quite a positive person. And have you always been that way?
I'd like to say yes. I think I have this thing where I want people to like me. Well, I used to more before becoming a mum.
Yeah.
I was badly bullied as a kid. And it just meant that it just put me in this quite desperate place, really. I think back to me at, you know, 7, 8, and I just feel really sorry for myself. Like, I just want to kind of go, it's all right, it's actually okay. And I kind of put a lot of my stuff, I link it back to that.
Like, really?
I was really excluded. There were two girls who, you know, like, make me their friend and then kind of drop me and take other friends away. But if it wasn't for that, then I wouldn't have spent the majority of my childhood at that point when I was at school, you know, in playground and stuff. I'd literally walk around the field, like, acting out little things in my head, like, singing to myself. Or no wonder I was bullied. Yeah. I was just talking to myself in the field. You know, there she goes again. But I think that sort of led me into my imagination. And so, you know, I think for me, my childhood, really, my happy place is with my sister and my brother. Mm. But that didn't make me reclusive. That didn't make me quiet. That didn't make me shy.
Yeah.
It made me
go the opposite.
I mean, and I think that may be middle child thing. If there was a camera, I was there.
Oh, really?
And if it tried to pan away, I would pan with it, you know? So, yeah, so I was always like a little storyteller, I think. But yeah, I would say quite upbeat, but the majority of that was because of wanting people to like me.
Yeah.
And then I think as I've got older, and only in the last couple of years, to be honest, I think we all have it with certain friends where, I think this might be going off tangent, where, you know, you kind of drift apart, but part of you really wants, and they don't care about you anymore, but you really want them to care about you still,
yeah.
Even though they might have negative energy and they might just drag you down. There's a part of you that's kind of like, well, why, like, what have I done? Like, what, like, making it bad, you know what I mean?
I'm so like that. Even when someone, you know, someone's not nice.
Yes.
They've never been that nice to you, but you're like, but I really want you to like me.
Yes, I just don't want you to not like, what did I do? Why? And I've got two people like that in my life that aren't actually in my life because I don't want to be. But, you know, kind of like, I've learned over the last couple of years to just let it go.
And you can't force them.
You can't force them. And sometimes you just got to go, all right. That's fine, because actually I have a really lovely unit of people around me, not all together, like in different friendship groups, and sometimes it's just over a text message that our relationship kind of exists, and that's fine. But yeah, so just letting those ones go. But that is something that stems from being bullied. And it's crazy to think that that's like, I'm 34, that stuff happened when
still,
I was 7.
And it's still there.
Yeah.
But that's what makes me worry with the kids, is I just think, you know how big this stuff is and you want to spend all your time avoiding it for them and trying to make everything okay, but then also you can't protect them from everything.
So maybe that's one thing though, because now in my life I'm like, well, that's fine. Like, I know that not everyone's going to like me. That's fine. But when it comes to like Buzz, who's, you know, at school full time, and if he says to me anything about, oh, so-and-so in class says this, I'm like, what? Why? You know, and then try not to make it a thing. It's horrible thinking of them going through stuff like that and knowing the repercussions that will have. So I guess it's more about giving them the tools to understand it and help them deal with it so that it doesn't become a thing later on in life.
Yeah, kind of make a positive out of it in a way.
Yeah, or just learn to deal with it. You know, my mum, you know, she would literally like march up to school, and at that point there wasn't much stuff done about bullying. It just was that, well, that's not going on in our school. I think it is.
Yeah, you know. Bury your head in the sand.
Yeah. So I think it is different now. But yeah, just having like the thought of them going through it is just awful.
Yeah. And you always, so you said it kind of made you into this creative person. And you went to theatre school, didn't you? Because obviously that's how you met Tom.
Yeah.
And then I knew you as, like, that's what you trained to be.
Yeah.
And I remember chatting to you and you were like, I just want to sing and I want to act. And now you have this amazing career.
Yeah.
How did you find that bit in between? Like, I remember our chats and it's like those bits, like, because you were always so supportive of Tom. And like, you're the most talented creative couple on the planet. But I feel like now it's become your time too.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I think when, because I was sort of, obviously I'd started drama school at the same time the McFly sort of started their thing. So I was, you know, I always say Tom was flying the world, you know, doing his thing, and I was at drama school pretending to be a penguin. You know, our lives were just very, very different. And I think when one of you is successful and the other one is kind of working to try and get anything, actually, like I would have, and I was happy getting small parts and feeling like I was achieving. I think as a couple, you can't compare yourself to the other person. Like, it's fine. Like, they are doing that and you've got to be happy in what you're doing. And it's the same in friendship groups as well. You've just got to be happy doing you.
Yeah, I never felt like you compared yourself.
No.
I never felt like you were like, oh, he's doing this and I'm only doing this.
No.
But I just, it's a hard industry to get into, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. And I think in acting, you know, we're talking about people like wanting people to like you in the acting world.
I think that pretty much makes you an actress.
Yeah. But it's cutthroat, isn't it? It's kind of like, yes, no, you know, you get rejected so much. And I felt there was no control there. Like, I'd do all this work for auditions, not hear anything, or get close and then get nothing. You know, after a while, your agent stops taking your calls. It's just that was going on. So I started writing really as a way of channeling this creativity that I had that I was only using in auditions. Like, I wanted to stop having other people control when I could be creative.
Yeah. And then, so obviously you did all that and then you had the first baby.
Yeah, Buzz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buzz. Oh, love him. So did you find a big shift in yourself from, because obviously I knew you always wanted to be a mum.
Yeah. And I think I was always like the maternal one of the group.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, we were, you know, we were the ones who kind of looked after everyone. It felt like mum and dad down the end of the road.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Have you got any sugar? I'm feeling rubbish today. Yours was like meeting place.
Yeah, and I loved that. I loved that maternal. And again, I think it's that thing of being liked. It's that thing of being needed. It's that thing of being wanted. And So I think maybe that was part of that, bringing that up again. So when I knew I wanted to become a mum.
Because then they have to want and need you.
Yeah. They've got they don't have a choice. I'm mummy, guys. So I think because I've always been maternal, I thought that motherhood was going to be really, really easy and I just slip into it. And it's also that thing of, like, whenever you're with other people's kids, when you don't have children, and everyone's like, oh, my God, you're so good with them. You're going to be such a good mum.
Yeah.
And you're like, and actually when they're yours and you've got all the other
it's so stuff, different.
It's so different. And you're not just sat there for half an hour playing with them. And you also realise that actually being the mum and when someone else comes in and it plays with them, you're just like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I can just unload the dishwasher or, you know, do something else.
Even though I have my own kids, I still enjoy babysitting for other people.
Yeah.
So I've been babysitting for my friend. She's got a little baby. And I love it because... Although, obviously, I'm doing that on a daily basis. First of all, he's a baby. I don't have one of those. And second of all, it's like I get to do all the bits and it's enjoyable and it's new and then I give him back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do that with my kids.
No. And that's something, but that's something that you don't take into consideration when you're actually about to become a mum and all the hormones that are going to flood through you. And, you know, I just, oh, when I actually became a mum, I was like, I don't know if I'm very good at this.
Really? Did you doubt yourself?
Yeah, massively. And I think because everyone's there sort of saying, oh, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this, you should do that. And you don't listen to yourself at all. You've got, I remember being on tour because the McBusters tour happened when Buzz was 4 weeks old. I remember taking him and at one point he was crying. And I can remember looking at Matt going, Matt's not my husband. Matt is my friend who just happens to have kids. And I remember turning to Matt and being like, do you know what this cry means? What does it mean? Like, I don't know.
It's like, I'm just about to go on stage, actually.
Yeah, whatever.
You need to deal with that.
You know, I think it's really
See, I've always found you quite headstrong. Like, you would know your stuff and you would be like, well, no, this is what I'm going to do. And I trust in my thoughts and my opinions.
I think that's where I got after. I think that's where I got afterwards.
Yeah.
I think when I started sharing online and started vlogging and sharing the doubts, that's when I realised everyone was exactly the same and no one knows what they're doing.
So what made you start doing that? Was it because you were doubting
yourself?
I don't
like overthinking things. I think I just think something and I share it. And okay. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I kind of, and that's how it's always stayed. I'm not someone who can kind of go, oh, well, that will engage really well and I'll save that for another day or a rainy day where I've not got anything. I just literally think of something and share it. And I think I didn't overthink it. I just started sharing. And no. I remember I had a blog with Hello Magazine. I'd kept updates on my whole pregnancy. But at the time, I was like, I just don't want to have a blog that's kind of like, today, this week, I did this and I went here and, oh, I wore this. I wanted it to be something. So I'd shared a month after Buzz was born, I'd shared about our sort of the birth and the hypnobirthing that I did and how amazing it was. Mm. And then I left it there and I just suddenly thought afterwards, that's painting a picture of everything being really rosy, everything being amazing. And right now, at that point, I thought to myself, you know, I am crying all the time. I'm finding this really difficult. Breastfeeding has not come easily. It's making me, like, weep all the time. And I just thought, if I was reading that positive account, I would be sat at home going, why is that person getting on so well and I'm not?
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong? And so I shared this other blog that was very honest about how difficult I was finding it. And the reaction to that made me go, it's okay. It's okay to, and actually hearing other people go, that's how I feel, kind of made me go, okay, let's talk about this then. Let's make it, let's just, you know, away with the Instagram filters and everything, everyone looking perfect all the time and whatever. And also I have this thing actually on Instagram where I don't like, I mean, I've been on a shoot, so I'm wearing a lot of makeup today, but I don't like posting loads of photos of me in makeup. Because I want to give people the truth, so that then in real life, if they meet me,
they're like, "Oh, she's so
she pretty." In real life, but look, I'm with a bit of mascara on. Oh, well done. You know what I mean? I just kind
you don't
of
want the opposite.
Yeah,
I've actually had someone follow me around the shops before, and then got face to face and gone, "Oh no, that's not her." And I had no makeup on, and I was like, Yeah, great. You've really helped with my confidence today.
It just reminds me of the massive gel bras that used to be around when we were younger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the massively heavy ones.
I used to love those.
Yeah, but can you imagine the end of the night? Yeah, but at the end of the night, you kind of whip that off and there's just a bit of thud on the floor and then you've got nothing there.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the same. It's the same.
It's exactly the same as chicken fillets.
Exactly. So then I started sharing, and then by then I'd already written a few books.
Yeah.
And I just thought,
is that where Happy Mum, Happy Baby came
from? Yeah, yeah. I'd written a few books, a few fiction novels, and then I just thought I'd like to write something in the non-fiction world about being a mum, but I don't want it to be a guide on how to. I don't want it to be that this is the right way. Yeah, I'm not doing it. Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what you didn't want. You didn't want
Exactly. I was, you know, I had Joan down the road telling me that, you know, Peter in the supermarket telling me how to breastfeed. Like, stop it. Stop. Mm. I don't need all those voices. Actually, you just got to push all that away. You've just got to learn to sort of stand there, nod, and take the bits that you want and drop everything else. So for me, I wanted to write a book about motherhood, but one that was honest and one that sort of said, this is my version, and kind of not censoring myself. So the first, when I sat down to write it, I just thought, let's just write, put everything in, put PCOS in, put miscarriage in, put everything in there, all doubts and everything. And then at the end, I can edit and take things out if I feel like I've gone too far. Because we write the books, we get to say what's in them.
Which is actually quite a big change from being part of that Tom from McFly's wife, everything's rosy, because people didn't really know the inside outs of your relationship or your life, really.
Yeah.
So then for you to write a whole book of honesty, obviously it wasn't about your relationship or anything, but it's quite a big step, really. It's quite
I guess I didn't see it. Yeah, I guess I just thought, you know what? If everyone thinks that the way that they parent is perfect, then we're all, like, no one thinks that.
No, no one.
And I wanted to take away all the judgment, because I feel like all the judgment that is in parenting is actually from ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of get rid of that a little bit. And I was worried, though. When the book got published, I was worried what was going to be taken from it. And, you know, we all know that, you know, certain segments get taken out and get put in magazines and papers and stuff. And you're like, oh, gosh, they've taken it out of context. Like, what are people going to think of that? And then they sensationalise certain bits or whatever. And so I was a little bit hesitant and apprehensive. But then the reaction was incredible. And having people say, this has helped me through pregnancy, all my worries, or this has helped me, I'm on maternity leave and I'm struggling, and just hearing that I'm not the only one saying things like, I wish, like, I wondered if I could give him back at a certain moment, like in the moment of pure frustration and sleep deprivation and desperation.
Which literally is like, you cannot say that.
Yeah.
And also as a parent yourself, I can't say that, because then people think that's like, I don't want him and then I don't love him.
Yeah, and then you're not, like, you don't deserve having your kids. Mm. But actually, what is that mother saying? And, you know, can we help her? Because also there's so many mums, like statistically, since doing the podcast, obviously it turned into a podcast, I've recently heard the statistics, which I keep drumming into people, is that the biggest cause of death within new mums is suicide. Mm-hmm. In the first year of having their child. We have to look after each other.
Yeah.
Because if that mum is there going, oh my God, I can't do this, I'm not a natural mother, and actually that is something that everyone feels, but we're just not vocalising.
No one says it, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I found that even when I was pregnant, because I didn't enjoy being pregnant. Mm.
But you had a horrible time. The press were horrible to you.
Yeah, and I was sick and all that jazz. But I felt like people would say to me, oh, isn't it lovely? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
And sometimes I just go, no. And then it was really funny, because like the women would have been going, oh, it's amazing, it's beautiful. And then I'd say no, and they go, oh, yeah, I know, yeah, I was so sick and da-da-da. And it's like, come on, like we're all in this together. And if we're not honest with each other or with ourselves, then it's like nothing's going to change. Like you say, if the suicide rate is so high after the first year, it's hard bloody work.
Yeah.
And it can be quite lonely.
Yeah.
And I think if everyone just keeps it all to themselves, then that's never going to change, is it?
No, exactly. And then so after the book, I kind of felt like it can't end there. I can't have people send me messages like that and then just kind of, you know, we all know what it's like. An album comes out, you listen to it for ages and then it goes. The book's the same, you read it, it goes. And like being on tour and having those conversations, I just didn't want it to end. I just kind of felt like it's so important that people get that message out there that parenting is very different for everyone and there's no right way. It's so important that you do you and what works for you and give yourself time. You know, even talking about bonds and stuff on the podcast, it's like so many people say they didn't get that instant rush, that instant bond. Like obviously you know that you love them, but there's an alien placed in your arms.
Yeah, but everyone only talks about, oh, and then that moment when I saw him and the love I had. And actually, a lot of my anxiety during my pregnancy was the build-up to that moment of what if I don't love him instantly? What if I look at this baby and I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, I did love him as much as you can love something you've never met before. But I always say to my friends, I'm like, until that baby starts smiling at you or like giving you something back, because for that first few weeks, they just take. And that can be for your mind. It's a bit like, okay, I keep giving you all this stuff and you just keep crying and you're just waking me up all night and I'm tired. And then when they gurgle and they laugh or they smile, then you're like, oh, and that love deepens.
Yeah.
But no one talks about that. Everyone's like, instantly, I was in love. It was amazing. And
I think it's two ways, though. I do think that for some people,
they
do have that instant. Like, but for a lot of people, it's a very murky area. For other people, it is an instant. Like, I don't like this. I'm not. And then you're going into like a maternal mental health thing, which again, we need to talk about. We can't be scared of talking about things like that because get the help that's there. There is help available. Talk. So for me, I needed the conversation to continue. So it's been amazing having the podcast because it's not just my voice. It's other people sharing their experiences. And it just highlights even more how different we all are.
Yeah, and how many people are going through so many different things.
Yeah.
So then what brought on Buddy? Well, we know what brought that on.
Wow.
But how did you feel going from one to two?
One to two felt all right. I think there's nothing like the jump from naught to one, because naught to one changes your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt like when Buddy arrived, everything was calmer.
Yeah, I kind of felt like with Parker, I panicked so much about everything.
Yeah.
And I wanted everything to be perfect that I probably didn't enjoy. I did enjoy it, but not as much as I could have.
Yeah.
And then when Carter came along, I was like, God, I didn't realise how easy one was. I should have just enjoyed it, you know. And I try, and I always think that when I see people with one child, I'm like, oh, you don't know how lucky you are.
But the thing is, it is a massive deal at the time. Like, it's easy for us to look back and kind of go, oh, that was the easy time.
Hindsight.
But it wasn't the easy time because you're learning everything and there's so many different things that you're experiencing for the first time that are, like, you're trying to, like, muddle your way through. Mm. And Tom was around a lot more, so I think that helped, you know, having Buddy. Mm. And yeah, although I had the busiest year on my maternity leave because I wrote Tapping Mama Baby. I wrote a different book as well, another solo fiction. And then I think we got the deal for that then. So we started writing it on maternity leave for that as well.
So did you how do you deal with the mum guilt of working? Or do you...
It's a juggle, isn't it? Some days, I think I found it toughest when it was just Buzz. And, you know, I think for ages, so Tom's mum and dad, if they're not at school, Tom's mum and dad sort of help us out. Because Debbie had to sort of leave her job so that she could come and work for us. And it was one of those things that was kind of always there on the sort of horizon. We knew that that was going to happen. I knew that I had a deadline. So I knew that from that September, Debbie would be looking after him. And I remember kind of saying to Tom, we need to sort this out, getting quite frustrated about it, knowing that we had to get it sorted. And then when it was sorted, I just cried and cried. Like, knowing that was it, like, for 3 days a week he was going to be with her. And even then, at the start, he was in our house. You know, I'd come and feed him, you know, and all that. So, yeah.
I think that's sometimes worse, though, when they're in the house, but you're not with them.
Actually, work became a lot easier when he started going to theirs.
Yeah.
Which is something that I really did not want to admit. I really wanted him to stay at home because then I think that would make me feel like I wasn't not with him, you know me? It would have felt like I was more hands-on than I actually was, even though I was almost trying to block. And you can't really concentrate in that scenario.
No.
Like, you know, they cry, you're kind of like, oh, is Debbie okay? Is she, you know, does she want me to come out? Is she, you know, she's fine.
Yeah.
She's got to get, like, what do I do? Whereas if he wasn't there, it was easier. But there were certain moments, stupid moments, where I would literally be sat at my desk writing, and I'd get a picture of him in a shopping trolley at the supermarket, mm-hmm. and I'd cry because I'd be like, I've not done that with him yet. I've not done it. Someone else has. This should be a moment that he experiences with his mum.
Being in a trolley.
I'm such a bad mum. You know, stupid things like that. And yeah, I think mum guilt. I don't know, at the moment I hadn't, so now I have three.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like sometimes I'm like, woohoo, day out.
So you don't have that. You don't have that guilt
now. I
think
I do. Well, I think if it's nights away, I do feel the guilt. Yeah. I haven't done night away, actually. And Max is still waking up in the night for boobs, so that'll be fun.
Of course.
This episode of Open Mind is brought to you by very.co.uk. New toys have landed at Very. Find all the toys everyone's talking about, including Barbie, LOL dolls and Frozen. Go to very.co.uk and shop now.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You did a post, didn't you, about not kind of feeling yourself after birth?
Oh, yeah,
Max for a while. And
do you know what? I think I was fine, and then... Well, I started trying to go for walks and stuff, and then because seeing other people online that were just had babies that were going for walks, and being like, I need to go for a walk. And then feeling like your insides are going to fall out your foof. It's kind of time to stop, you know. To go home, Giovanna, go home. Before you, before you lose your bladder, go home. And then kind of nice living in your bubble. And then I'd come into London to have my checkups, and then I was meeting, well, it just turned out that I ended up being in a semi-work meeting and a work environment. And I just suddenly freaked out a little bit, I think. It kind of made me, it really dampened my spirits. And I don't know, I just all felt really overwhelming. And
how long after?
About six weeks after.
Right.
Yeah, and I kind of, it really put me in a bit of a slump, I guess.
Why do you think that was, though?
I think having a baby, it's like a different world. And that thing of seeing your old world and feeling like you don't actually belong anymore.
Yep.
Or that at that particular moment, like the world is still turning, but you're not on that world right now.
Mm-hmm.
It just... And almost like that feeling of... It's waiting for you, or it kind of needs you. It's something else that needs you. It's something else that's pulling you away from your precious family time. And I do think that, so for Max, I always said that and I was always going to go for a third, but I thought it would happen in like a couple of years' time. Max had other ideas. And I think I'd always said to myself that when I have a third, because maternity leave with my same maternity leave. I never have maternity leave. I just think of that whole first year as maternity leave, even though it's not ever. I always said that that year after having my third baby would be off, totally off. And I knew that all the hard work that I'd put in when Buddy was little was kind of not paying off, but it was all happening. It was all kind of projects were being, you know, put out there and like launched and things like that, and I just kind of felt like I'm not getting that, actually. I'm not getting that time off, and I need to come back. And you know, it's just really hard. It just felt like a complete pull, and I just wanted to not be a part of any of it, actually.
And how did you get past that, do you think?
I think sharing about it online helped. Because, I wrote that, I saw, like, it was World Mental Health Day, I think, when I shared the post. And I'd seen loads of people posting about really positive things. And I was sat at home and kind of going, I don't feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm sat at home, I don't want to get dressed. I don't want to see people. People are saying, no, let's meet up, let's do this. Nah, I don't, you know. So I thought I'd share. how I felt, honestly. And I do think talking is the biggest cure in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's the big, not cure, because I think we'll always have those voices in our heads, or not even voices, those things that just dampen us and put a black cloud over everything, and there's no reason. And for me, you know, I had a lot of hormones going through my body. Yeah. You know, I was worried about certain bits that, you know, whatever. And
but there's so much that changes, isn't there? I think everyone thinks of the physical changes of having kids.
Yeah.
But mentally, there's such a shift. There's like with your first, it's like your whole life has changed.
Yeah.
Your priorities are completely different. And then I think, obviously, the more you have, the more you feel like you should be at home with them. You've chosen to have children, so you're like, I should
and
be
you know
here.
What? I used to work in a nursery, and I never understood mums who had, this is so ironic now, mums who had children to put them into nursery.
Oh, really?
I was like, why?
Judgy McJudgerson.
No, but I was just like, you've had children, have children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now I understand it. I totally understand it. You've worked your ass off to get into that job.
Yeah.
And you've had a kid. So's your husband. Mm. Your husband's gone back to work. You know what I mean? And financially.
But before you have kids, everything seems so black and white, doesn't it? It's like, you know, when you see a kid kicking off and you're like,
oh, God, come on.
Tell your kid not to do that. And then when you have one, you're like, you know what? He's away from me.
Yeah.
So I'm just happy. If he's screaming near you, he just can go at it, you know.
But now you kind of look at that mum differently as well. Mm. You kind of go, you know, I've been there. I was talking to Tom the other day about Buddy, who, you know, he is our sunshine and showers kid. He can but, you know, he can be having the biggest meltdown, continuous about different things. And I look at people and I know that they're judging. They look at him and they look at me and I see that judgment.
Yeah.
And then literally 30 seconds later, we'll be passing different people. He'll be laughing his head off and I'll see people around him go, oh, what cute baby, like cute little boy. I'm like, oh my God, like, and so
Carter.
It's just accepting it. It's just accepting that is my child. That is me in parenting and not getting lost in that feeling of like, oh my God, they're judging me.
Do you worry about the boys? Mental health. I know we've said about bullying and things like that, and I suppose noticing that Buddy is like sunshine and showers.
Yeah, I do. I think for us, it's like talking is the biggest thing, and it's so hard when your kids start school. I know a lot of people who kind of will get this. You know, they get into the car, and you're like, "So, how was your day?" And they'll be like, "Fine."
Yeah.
What did you have for lunch? Don't know. Who did you play with? No one.
My kids do this. You have no friends?
Exactly. Yeah. I literally phoned up. I was phoning up about something else. And I was like, boss says that he doesn't play with anyone at lunchtime. And they were like, he does. He plays with everyone. He's a very liked boy. And I was like, thank God. It's just because they get in the car, they can't be asked to talk.
Yeah, but you used to be like that. I know. Always try and remind myself. I'm like, I used to do that. What did you have for lunch? Don't remember. What did you do today? Work. You know, like, and even with work, when I used to get home, my mum used to say, what did you do today? Mum, I've done it all day. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, and we totally get that. Like, your head is fuzzy at the end of a busy day. Like, oh, like, so I've had a busy day before this. So I know that I'll get in the car and I'll kind of like zone out because my head is like fuzzy, literally, with all the things that have been loaded into it. So they obviously feel exactly the same.
But we want to know. I want to know if it's had a happy day.
So I think actually what I've kind of discovered with mine is actually just letting them chat whatever about whatever. And then at dinner time, it will come, like, slowly it will come out, you know, and then you'll hear, oh, so-and-so said this, and they're like, what? Yeah. but, yeah, so I do think that, I think it's something that we'll all talk about now, you know. I think that for our generation, our parents didn't really talk about mental health. It wasn't a thing. I think now, with the amazing work that's being done, you know, you're spreading awareness, I think it is something that people will just know about and be aware of.
I notice schools are even on it now, aren't they? And
also doing stuff that's good for your mental health.
Mm.
You know, I think if we look at things like running, I've started running.
Oh, you and me both, mate.
You know, and run the trek that we're doing. Oh, yes. This massive trek. You know, there are things that you do that are good for your soul. And we need to be filling our days with things like that, or having that thing in the distance that we're reaching for, that is something like our trek that we're training for, that is going to...
Or not training for.
Come on, Frank, come on. But I think it's important to, you know, so things like PE, not just kind of letting it be something that all the athletic kids need to do. every kid needs to do it and enjoy it, because
it's good for
your mind. And I think, in terms of running, I don't have a runner's body. I run more than people that probably do have runner's body that don't. Do you know what I mean? There are people that have a runner's body that don't run. And I run. This is a runner's body, believe it or not. You know, I run.
I noticed those calf muscles yesterday. Oh, don't you be silly. I noticed those bad boys. I'm not even lying.
I was like,
you can tell she's been running. And how are you now since after Max? And you seem in a good place.
I am in a good place. I feel... you know what? He is just such a lovely little baby. He's like a happy little Buddha. Mm-hmm. Literally, he is.
Do you think that's
because
he's
joyful.
The third? So it's like everyone has to just...
I don't know. You just have to look at him and he breaks out in a massive smile. Like the other two were criers.
Yeah.
Remember Tom's mum coming over when Buzz was having a meltdown and she sort of said, oh yeah, Tom did that for 2 years. That's basically what the boys did. Like Buddy used to wake up every morning crying. Like, that's the first thing he did, whether it was a nap or whether it was the morning. He would wake up every day crying. And you know, they're just criers. Whereas Max is not. Like, he'll cry if there's, like, a reason, like, you know, his teeth are cutting at the moment or things like that. But generally, he's just a really easy, happy... I mean, it could change. I mean, I've had people on the podcast who, you know, kids are really young and they're like, they're really calm. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, Carter was like that.
Every
Parker was an awful
through.
Baby. Now he's like Mr. Perfect. Like, not perfect, but, you know, Mr. Chilled. Carter was a really chilled baby and now he's a real pain in the bum.
But it's also everything goes through phases. Like, nothing lasts. This too shall pass is the thing that kind of is everywhere around motherhood and parenthood. It's kind of like your baby might be crying every morning right now, but one day they won't. You know, and also this happy phase with Max, this isn't going to last forever. There's terrible twos, a year away. There's going to be testing times.
Which
where
I think is terrible threes, not terrible
threes.
Twos.
Threes is three teenagers.
Yeah.
So I know there are going to be times where he grows up and pushes boundaries. But then I also know that we're not out of the woods with the other two. You know, they're all going to go through different phases in life and growing up that are going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of push and pull and we're going to have to kind of discover it together. But hopefully through a lot of listening and just being there.
Do you think Tom is like, because he's quite a hands-on dad, isn't he?
Yeah.
Do you think that helps a lot with you mentally being with the kids a lot? And
yeah. Yeah, we are a team. Like, I know that you and Wayne are the same. Mm-hmm. Like, we're very lucky that our jobs are the majority of the time at home.
Mm-hmm.
It means that we're there for breakfast, we're there to have dinner, we're there to have like bath time, all of us all together, not us in the bath, but I mean to do the bedtime routine.
We're all in the bath together.
All in the bath together. We've got a really big bath.
That's a swimming pool.
Honestly, even the three boys now, we're at the point now where we think we might have to bath them separately.
Right.
Those limbs, they're very long. But, you know, so I think we're really fortunate that we can be there for it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's just for now, because we know we all have careers where you can't predict, like you couldn't predict 6 years ago that I'd be doing all the things that I am now.
No.
But then in another 6 years, I could be doing something completely different or it could go off on a tangent. You just never know. So at the moment, we're just enjoying doing as much as we can together, essentially. And Tom is, talking about the three thing, I think I would be a weeping mess if it wasn't for how Tom being there and us being a team.
Yeah. Which people don't always expect.
No, and I feel like maybe I do Tom an injustice sometimes because I'm just a bit like, he's a dad.
Mm.
You know, when people are like, is he a hands-on dad? I mean, he's a dad.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I kind of have this thing where people sort of say, you know, what kind of a dad is he? Or is he hands-on? Well, you wouldn't ask what kind of a mum am I?
No.
Or is Javan hands-on? Imagine if...
No, if, actually.
No. But what we've kind of... That is the norm.
I get really frustrated when I'm at work and people say to me, oh, is Wayne babysitting? And I'm like, no, he's bloody not. They're his children. He's actually just at home with the kids. He is not babysitting.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because also it's just a turn of phrase.
Yeah.
Like this whole daddy daycare thing. It's just a tongue-in-cheek, like a little bit of... And, you know, and I totally get that. Yeah, it's just difficult. I think we're at a weird phase right now where we're expecting women to have these careers and do all these other things, but also take all of the load mm-hmm. at home. And actually, we need to share that and not be so... But I think it's difficult because Tom sometimes in things like that is like, well, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Mm. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know. I just, you've got to release and
I do think, to share yeah, that. I've had those conversations with my friends when they're feeling a bit down and overwhelmed. Mm. And I'm like, but you're not letting him take stuff because you want things done how you want it done. And I'm like, you either have to accept that you are going to do it all because you want it done a certain way, or you have to just... let him do it and not do it your way, you know? Well, but I think it's like we do think we have to do everything and be perfect at everything.
And if we think that if we don't do it, nothing will get done. Mm. It will get done, just at a slightly different pace that's not yours. Like, so I had to go up to Manchester in March to film The Baby Club, the second series, and I took Max with me. And until then, I'd always done the kids' bags and stuff the night before, like packed their uniform. Like, their uniforms were out, their bags were packed. Like, so because they have to leave at 8 o'clock the next morning, I just think, take that stress away. And, you know, or I'd pack bags and stuff. And part of me was like, how are they going to get on if I'm not there? And, you know, it doesn't matter if Tom's running around the house at 5 to 8, you know, and getting those stuff, that stuff in the bag. It's still getting done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so maybe I have to take a step back in that and kind of go, he survived that. Not only did he survive, he thrived. They were all fine. Mm. And that's another thing, I think, though, for us, it's kind of feeling like, in some way, I think we would like to feel like it would all fall apart if we weren't there. And it's a good thing if it doesn't.
Yeah, I do get those moments when Wayne's with the kids and he'll send me a video and I'm really happy that they're having a really nice time, but I'm also really hurt. I'm like, but I'm not there. And
I know.
I really want to be there and I feel really bad.
Also, I think there's a thing where when you're with your kids, for me, I'm thinking about a million different things, like the dinner, like everything else that's got to be organised, the washing, like these things. Whereas I feel like, for me, Tom has the ability to shed all the other stuff and just focus on the play.
Mm. See, I get the guilt about that, though. That really plays on my mind.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to be able to do that. But who's going to do all the other shit?
Yeah. But I can't. I don't even do most of that other shit, I'm going to be honest. But I get, like, I had a conversation with Wayne the other day and I was like, I feel like the boys are going to, like, hate me when they're older because, like, I don't play well. Like, I get bored after 10 minutes. Like, I can do all the other stuff. I can cuddle. I can give you dinner. I can do everything else and I'll take you out and whatever. But I can't run around the garden like a dog for 3 hours. Or...
oh, Frank. I mean, I know.
Who would have thought?
Pull your finger out. Call your acting skills.
You'll probably be great at that. But there's all that stuff, and I'm like, and I see them laughing with Wayne, and I'm like, oh, I'm so rubbish at that. And then I go into this spiral of feeling guilty about it. And Wayne was like, just shut up. Like, just stop it. Like, you're being ridiculous. Yeah. The boys love you and it's fine, you know. But anyway, so I want to know your top tips for keeping positive. Because I know you do have a lot on your plate, but you manage to keep a sense of, you always kind of look on the bright side of things. It's something I've always noticed about you. Mm. Like, even when I was stressing about this sleeper train to the Himalayas and you were like, but it's fine, we'll all be in it together. And I'm like,
can I think about Harry Potter?
Is it really though? I don't think it is.
It is.
Yeah, I just want to know how you get through those darker days.
I stop comparing myself to other people. So that means if even on Instagram, sometimes I post and run so I don't get to scroll endlessly. I stop going on certain websites that make us compare ourselves to other people or tell us what to think in terms of what's acceptable in a physical way. Certainly, you know, entertainment type websites.
Yeah, I think we all know what you're talking about.
I actually find running really good for my mind. And sometimes if I put the kids to bed and I'm exhausted and I'm just like, I just want to go to sleep and I feel terrible, actually going for a run puts a different spin on that. And I actually find going for a run when either the kids are at school or the kids are in bed really good, because I think there's nothing like going for a run on like a Saturday morning when everyone's at home, coming home in time for breakfast and it just being chaos.
Yeah.
Like that, all, like straight away, all those endorphins that you've just released and let loose, like they just get crushed straight away. You're like back into motherhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas if you've gone for a run, you feel you buzzing in the evening at like 8 o'clock and then you're like, oh yeah, now I'm going to do an hour of writing because I feel great.
So that's how you do it. I always wonder how she does that late night writing.
So it was after that as well, with the whole Max thing, before that post, I agreed to do a podcast with someone and they kept describing me as the most positive person on the internet and just saying all these positive things. And kind of I felt like, but I'm honest. Has the point been missed? And just being told, you're positive, you're positive, you're positive. Mm. And inside, at that point, I had this little voice inside of me screaming, just going, I am not happy. I am not positive. I am crushed. And so it's weird. And that's, I think, realising that positivity isn't always there. It's not, you can't be positive all the time. Mm. I think it comes and you've got to embrace it when it comes. And when it's not there, you've kind of got to go, okay, what do I need to do? Do I need to go for a run? Or do I just need to kind of go, okay, I'm going to sit in this feeling for a little while,
mm-hmm.
realise it's there, and then...
Know that it will go.
Yeah. Who knows? But I'm not the most positive person on the internet. Just
okay.
FYI.
Just putting it out there. Giovanna Fletcher is not the most positive person on the internet. She's just honest. Well, thanks for being honest with us, Giovanna.
I have not bored you too much. I'm not used to doing all the talking. I'm just used to listening. But thank you.
You're very good at talking.
Someone shut her up.
This episode of Open Mind the podcast was sponsored by very.co.uk.